Checkmate.
This is the Chestnut Checkers Podcast.
Checkmate.
Learn a new mindset to create wealth.
We need to be more independent thinkers, man.
Passive income.
Mathematics is precise.
A successful business.
Chess moves.
And money management strategies.
This is Chestnut Checkers.
I want to talk today about a few things. I want to start out with restraint. And I want to talk about how that can help you in your life and how it's helped me. And I'm going to talk about two things that I restrain myself from doing on purpose because it makes me more successful. And I'm going to tell you why, right? So it's two things I don't do in my life. If you know me, if you've been around me, you know there's two things I don't do. I don't eat pork. Now, it's actually three things, right? I don't eat pork. I don't drink alcohol. And I don't curse. And people say, why are you doing all that, man? I don't understand why you don't curse. Everybody curse. Everybody drinks. Everybody eats pork. But there's no religious reason I do that. Now, I am a Christian, but there's no religious reason I'm doing it. The reason why I restrain from certain things is because I want a daily reminder of how strong I am. When the whole world is doing these things, and there's nothing wrong with it. I don't have a problem with it, but I want to have a daily reminder every single day of my strength. That reminder of you're not doing something can make you incredibly strong and it make you understand how good you are. And it separates you from the crowd. So this is why I do that. So I encourage you guys for this month, find something in your life that's common that you have to confront all the time, like eating pork or drinking alcohol or cursing, watching Netflix. It don't matter what it is. Pick something and say, look, I'm going to cut that by half this month. Every day I'm going to wake up and I'm going to say, I'm going to cut this thing I do every day in half. And I'm going to make a conscious effort to do that. I promise you, if you do that, you're going to see changes in your life. You're going to see your ability to do things you didn't do before. Your mind is going to start expanding. Now, if I could do that, what else can I do? That's a great first step for people when they want to see or want to march toward success, right? I always tell people, find something in your life. Don't matter what it is, and cut it out. You can even say, look, I'm going to cut it by half. And I encourage you guys to stop cursing. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm not saying I'm against it, but I'm saying it will give you a marker every single day of something you have to restrain yourself from doing. All of a sudden, you'll realize your mind is expanding. Your vocabulary is expanding. You're starting to see things different. You're like, how is this? I just stopped this one thing. Maybe since I stopped cursing, maybe I can do this. Maybe I can exercise. Maybe I can do this. It'll be a changing point in your life. So that's what I encourage you guys to do. And it's a challenge that I give to each and every one of you. To pick something in your life, it don't matter what it is. Eating out could be one. And cut it by half. And I promise you, you'll see changes in your life. So we're going to talk about bras. We're going to talk about crypto. We're going to talk about some Amazon. Then we're going to talk about the Bank of America mortgages. There was a lot of excitement this week about the Bank of America mortgages. And I want to give a good lesson in how mortgages work and how banks work, because a lot of people were excited. A lot of people were excited about this thing that Bank of America announced, saying that they were going to give minorities in minority neighborhoods access to more mortgages. Because they said they're even going to think about or test disregarding credit scores, which we know in the minority community, because of different biases or whatever, we tend to have lower credit scores, right? Because of economic situations or whatever it is. But the true fact is we have a lower credit scores on average than other Americans. But a lot of people screamed and were happy and excited about this change. The thing about it is I applaud it in concept. It seems like a good idea, but me, I know how the banks think. I know how banks work. I know how finance works. And I promise you the banks don't ever end up on the bad side of the stick. They will always figure out a way to make their money. If they're going to give you, they're going to take on more risk by giving somebody who they consider a risk a mortgage, they're going to make it up some other kind of way. And this is what's so dangerous about the banks. This is why it's so important to understand how financing risk works, because the banks will always shift the risk to you whenever they can. And your job is to shift it right back to them. A lot of people look at money, they look at finance, look at wealth building. They say, look, I want to make as much money as I can, but they disregard risk. Risk is very important. The banks know this. That's why half of what the banks do is managing risk. Half of what they got, entire office buildings full of people who do nothing but manage and offload risk all day. Because risk is where you lose money. Risk is where you don't make as much profit as you could have. That's the reason why they do this. right? So if the banks, if give you a mortgage to somebody who they think is in a bad neighborhood or something they think is a risk, I promise you, they're going to make the money up. They're going to get it from you. Banks don't take on more risk. They shift it to you. And I'm going to tell you a good example. The PMI system. I'm going to explain to you what it is because so many people don't understand what they're paying. They think it's a positive thing. But I'm going to explain to you what PMI is and what happened, why PMI is so prevalent now on mortgages. Now, traditionally, before the early 90s, this is how things were done. PMI was rare. It was around, but it was rare. Because by putting 20% down on a mortgage, the bank has more leeway because, look, let's say, for example, you take the loan over there, you'd fall on the first payment. The banks know they can get their money back because you already paid off 20% of the house. So they know they can get their money back. Therefore, the risk is lower. Now, in the early 90s, 1993, I believe it was a mortgage act that the government passed, which in the 1990s, the U.S. government started figuring out that new homes were a great way to boost up the American economy. People are working on the homes, selling the homes, real estate agents, all these different things going on. So the U.S. government decides we want everybody to have a house because the more people that have houses, the more this economy gets boosted up and the more people make more money. So 1993, they passed the act and said, look, we're going to extend mortgages to a different set of people who couldn't get mortgages before. Before that, everybody had to put down 20%. Your grandparents probably never had to pay PMI. So 1993, they passed a law that says, look, we want everybody to have mortgages. Forced the banks to accept 3% or whatever, the FMA loans. The bank's going to respond, well, we can't take on that kind of risk. Somebody puts down 3%, what if they default the next day? Well, I don't look. So we're going to use this thing that's always been around, but nobody's really using it, called PMI. Private mortgage insurance, one of the biggest thefts, one of the biggest ripoffs that ever existed, and everybody just pays it like it's nothing. I'm going to tell you what PMI is. Now, you see it on the line. You figure you got to pay it. It's just part of the mortgage. This is something we got to do. PMI is a way that the banks shifted the risk away from them to you. You put down 3%. And you think you're doing good, but you got to pay PMI. Over 5 years, you've paid back the 20% you would have had to pay down anyway by PMI more premiums. So let's say, for example, you had a $400,000 house. Let's say $200,000. Those numbers are easier. $200,000 house, you were supposed to put down $40,000, right? $40,000 goes down, you got 20% equity down in your house, right? So you own 20% of the house, basically. So you say, look, the government, all right, what the banks say, well, we can't take on that risk. That's too much. So what we're going to do is we're going to make them pay PMI, which is the same difference. Except now, after 5 years, you don't own 20% of the house. Or the insurance payments just disappeared into thin air. So it made the insurance companies richer. And the crazy thing is, I want you guys to research this. The banks own the insurance companies. The banks own the private mortgage insurance companies. They own them. So the premiums go, Bank of America says, whoa, you put 3% down in this house, you got to put PMI down. All right, well, you say, well, that's a good idea because no other way I can get a house. So you pay that PMI premium. Bank of America's protected because if you don't pay for that house, the mortgage insurance pays for the house. But guess what? Something else you didn't know. If you don't, you default on that mortgage. The PMI only ensures that the bank itself gets their money. The insurance company goes after you because to replenish that money. So regardless, if you default, that insurance in no way protects you. It only protects the banks. That's it. It only protects the banks. So a lot of you are saying, I didn't know all this about PMI. I didn't understand this. You know, I've been paying it for years, but PMI can be removed. But the crazy thing is, the banks won't do it unless you call. You could be paying your PMI for years. And this is the thing about it, is that PMI is required until there's a debt to value ratio, which means that what you own the house is up to 78% of what the total value is. So now, in the last year, really, we can just do last year, houses went up 20-30% in some areas. I bet some of y'all still paying PMI. The banks won't take it off. Even though your house may have went up 40%, you may have a $200,000 house, went up to $300,000. Now you only owe 66%, two-thirds of what the value was. They won't take it off unless you call them and do the paperwork. If you just let it go, they'll keep taking in premiums every month. So you got to call. You got to do an appraisal in most cases, or you got to argue with them one time. I had to do it one time for like 2 weeks till they took it off. So, or you can refinance out of it. So there's two ways out of it. You can call and tell them, look, man, my value of my house is higher now. I'm looking online right now. They're going to say, we don't go by those, because of course they don't. They go by their own appraisal. But you can call the banks and you can get your own appraisal for like $300 or $400, I don't know what the appraisal costs, $500, and they'll remove that PMI. And that'll save you a lot of money over the long term. Second, you can refinance out of it also. So if you have, may I want each and every one of you to have a mortgage to check your mortgage statement and see if you still have PMI and see if you can get it removed. But I say all this to say that whenever banks do something, it seems positive. They're on the back end, they're going to get their money back some other way. So with these minority mortgages, they always shift the risk to the consumer. So some way, somehow, I don't know how they're going to do it, Bank of America is going to shift that risk to minorities. They're not going to take on risk of hundreds and hundreds of mortgages. They can't do that. They're a bank. Their business is to offload risk. They will either give a bunch of mortgages out and sell them off to another hard company that's probably bad, or they'll shift the risk and do some kind of insurance and make you pay for it. There's no way in heck they're going to actually do this without shifting the cost and the risk to the minorities they're trying to help. That's exactly what's going to happen. They will never help you because the bank is a very logical, almost sociopathic organization. And there's nothing wrong with that. I don't have nothing against the banks. It's just that you have to know that game so you can counteract it. That's all I say, is you have to know that game so you can counteract it. This is a game they're playing. If somebody beats you in chess, that's not bad to beat somebody at chess. They just beat you. But it's your responsibility to learn the game so you can at least fight back. So that's what that is. They can do whatever they want. That's the game. You're playing a game, game of life, the game of economics, or whatever it is. This is a game. And you got to learn the game. This is why it's important for you guys to constantly learn, constantly grow, constantly get new information, because game changes. Game is always changing. And you have to know how it goes. So let's move on. So I want to talk about two more things. I want to talk about bras and I want to talk about Amazon. Let's talk about Amazon. I want to talk about now. It's been going down really in a bear market for months. And there's a lot of it probably shouldn't be going down as much, right? Because whenever there's a bear market, all stocks will fall in most cases. But it's also a great opportunity to find some of these stocks that shouldn't be going down and buy more at a cheap. Now, this is a long-term play, right? That's what's so important to understand. It's so sad. You go back a year and a half ago. 2 years ago, I used to do these lives, especially on Instagram. I'd have 4,000 people in the live sometimes because stocks were moving. Stocks were hot. Stock people were making money. Now we got 400 or 500 people. Now I'm appreciative for everybody's in there, but it's kind of sad that people jump off of it like this. Now, anybody that's over 25 years old knows that there's been like three cycles in their life where stocks have been up and down. I don't understand why it's so hard for people to understand that it's coming back. I think it's a psychological problem. I forgot I read about it. I forgot what the fallacy is. Whenever something's going down, people continue to think it's going to go down. They get scared and panic. And when it goes up, they jump on. And this is the reason why so many people lose so much money. Because of this. Because you don't understand what's going to happen next. This is just a cycle. And there's a lot of stocks that are out there that are going to do well in the next 2 years that people are missing out on. One's Amazon. I think that Amazon is going to, especially since the split, especially in a down market, Amazon is a great, great buy right now. And I'm buying it every chance I get because I know where Amazon is going. I know Amazon is expanding their business model to include cloud computing in this. And more companies, if you guys don't know, are jumping on this platform, right? A lot of companies are jumping on to AWS because of ease of use. It's actually expensive, but ease of use and it's constant uptime in the websites. And you got support and you got all these things. Even though it costs more, it's a lot easier than having a bunch of servers at your office. So a lot of people are moving over to AWS. So this gives Amazon an extreme amount of leverage over tech companies in the next few years. But in the next few years, there's a lot of money to be made in Amazon. I'm taking out some long-term options and also buying the stock. Because I believe in 2024, we're going to see a big turnaround, not only in stocks, but in crypto. We know that the Bitcoin halving is happening. Let me see where it's happening right now. I think it's in 2024, but the date always changes because it's not by dates, it's by blocks. So I don't know what, let's see the exact date of it, of the Bitcoin halving. So it's supposed to happen in March, between February and June of 2024. Probably, I think it would be earlier, probably March or something. So we all know what's coming. We all know what's going to happen. We've seen it before. I'm telling you guys, please don't let this next cycle go by and not take advantage of it. So let's move on. Talk about the state of the stock market. The stock market is in a bear market. It was in a bull market for like 4 or 5 years, maybe more. Now we're in a bear market. Bear market is when stocks go down, when people start taking profits from the previous cycle. So with that being said, is that in a bear market, we don't know how long it's going to last. We don't know how significant it's going to be, but we are in a bear market. But bear markets are when the most millionaires are made in the stock market. It's not when the stock's already going up, because once it's going up, a lot of the people that got in now start selling. There's a saying in the stock market for professionals, for more advanced people that make a lot of money with stocks, is they say these words. They say, you sell on the way up. I know for a new beginner, they're going to say, sell on the way up. Well, I'm going to wait until it gets to the highest. Nah, you don't do that. You sell on the way up. You get out while it's still going up, and you buy it when it's down. Right? On the way down, you buy it. On the way up, you sell it. And that's a recipe to make a lot of money over a lot of years with stocks, crypto, and any other asset. Let's move on. So Bitcoin still has plenty of room for growth as a 5-10 year play like my own. We need adoption. Now, the thing about Bitcoin is that it's a great play. And the reason why is because it's so undervalued, right? And it's got a lot of potential. And these are plays that I like to do, because if you do with these types of plays, and I talk about this concept in my book, with these types of plays, is that the risk is not low in this, right? Now, this is a high-risk play. Bitcoin may not even work out. But if it does, you're going to make 100 times your money. If it doesn't, you lose one time. We will do plays like this, maybe 3 or 4 of them. And just, well, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. If it does, it does. But if it does, we make 100 times our money. This is a lot of times, this is how investment banks work. This is how private equity works. This is how venture capital works, is that they'll have 100 projects. They may throw $1 million, $2 million each one. 90% of them are going to fail. But those 10% that do well make all the money for the other 90% that they lost. This is how the rich get richer, because they're able to see risk for what it is, an opportunity, analyze that risk, and then make money off the risk. But the poor people look at risk and they get scared. Oh my God, I could lose my money. That's why the poor stay poor and the rich stay rich. Because understanding this thing called risk. Risk is not bad. It's just a variable. That's it. It don't. But a lot of times when we're in poverty or we're in middle class, we're so afraid of risk. We're so afraid of doing anything our own. We're so afraid of taking any economic or financial risk that we let the man control us our entire lives. So we take a look at BROZ. BROZ is a ERC-20 token. So because it's ERC-20, it could be stored on any ERC-20 wallet, but it may not show up, but it could be stored there. Any ERC-20 wallet will store BROZ. So it's all about managing risk.
Thank you for joining today's podcast. I really appreciate your support. If you want more wealth building information, education, and tips in stock market, crypto, and other assets such as real estate, follow me on Instagram. And also on YouTube, it's the same name, Tall Guy Tycoon. That's TallGuyTycoon. The link is also in the description. Also, you can support this podcast by donations. That link is also in the description. I hope each and every one of you has a great week. And again, thanks for listening.